Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening. Who are tuned in, we give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
O.
Ashe, O. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahir. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. Began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and are happy to be celebrating our fifth year on the air here with you. Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, from 3 to 5 Pacific. and we ask that you please continue to support us and our sponsor, Manhood Raising Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones. You can find Dr. Jones on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at manhoodraisedculture.com and as a liking group page for Manhood Raising Culture. Also support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. You can find Brother Arlie on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And last but not least, we want to always, always, always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively, on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So as a reminder, please go to wordpress.com and check out the Redistribute the Pain campaign at redistributethepain.wordpress.com and check out how you can get involved, whether you're on the inside or on the outside, and whether you have a loved one, family member, or friend who is behind the walls or not. We need for you to get involved. There's all kinds of things that you can do from a volunteer perspective, and all of the energy is needed in order to free our brothers and sisters from their pain and suffrage and the mass incarceration system that we see exhibited here on a day-to-day basis in the United States of America. So please get involved with the Redistribute the Pain campaign. You can find out more. We also have a Facebook page for Redistribute the Pain. So please look us up and get involved. And if you have a family, loved one, or friend that is behind enemy lines and maybe you've lost track of them, we can help you find them as well. So never give up, because it means the world to our brothers and sisters when they hear from us. So tonight I have joining me, I have the honor of having join me, Baba G2 Siddiqui out of California. I'm going to go ahead and open up his mic and get tonight's conversation started. Greetings, Baba Siddiqui. How are you doing this evening?
Greetings, Queen. I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good. I'm so pleased that you accepted my invitation to come on the air today, and I appreciate your help. I know we only have you for an hour, so I want to make the biggest impact as we possibly can during this conversation. So please, if you don't mind, please introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay, well, before I do, I had sent you a message. Obviously, you hadn't had a chance to review it yet, but if you need me to stay longer, I'm able to. Okay. My name is G2 Siddiqui. I reside in Southern California, specifically Los Angeles. I'm an ex-prisoner who spent a total of 9 years behind the walls, which pales in comparison to those brothers and sisters that they have been warehoused for decades, some almost a half a century, and in some cases a half a century. I got involved with the liberation movement, that concept and that practice to the community upon my release in the 80s, and I've been consistently involved with contributing whatever I can to the liberation of African people since that date.
Ashe, Ashe, thank you again for accepting the invitation to be here tonight and for that introduction. Now, I really want to get into the conversation on where we are, especially considering what you've borne witness to in society, both inside and out. And, you know, as you heard at the beginning, we support our brothers and sisters who are behind the walls, and but we have so many of them who are there now, who are being impacted. And we saw a big increase after the so-called war on drugs. It really turned into a war on the Black community. So can you talk about that? Talk about what you've seen as far as the change that has happened in the prison system and where we are as a community and what we can possibly do about it.
Okay, well, first of all, it's my position that the war on drugs that, as you say, that eventually evolved into a war on Black people has always been a war on Black people ever since the inception of chattel slavery, we've been under attack. So that's nothing new for us. What has changed is our response to it. There was a period of time where we had the civil rights movement, which basically addressed issues related to trying to assimilate into the society that we were forced into, and then that evolved into the Black Liberation Movement, which in most cases didn't want to assimilate and wanted to change the balance of power. We began to look at things more scientifically in terms of looking at capitalism and imperialism and how this country in particular controls movement of people, controls natural resources on the continent and other places. And, you know, we begin to challenge that, particularly within prison. And after the event of the program that was started by J. Edgar Hoover, I believe in the 50s, counterintelligence program, which targeted a lot of different individuals and organizations. But in particular, they had a interest in destroying the those that were part of the Black Liberation Movement who challenged this system, who was willing to stand up and fight on a collective level. And they target those individuals, brothers and sisters, in those organizations that were progressive in nature, revolutionary in nature, and try to decimate them, not just for the purpose of destroying the organization, but destroying any hope for those generations that came after them to challenge the system. So that's where we are today, where there's been a revitalization of that movement and people being reinvigorated to take part in that. And we in prison have played a significant role in making that happen.
Yes, indeed. When we speak of revolution, for some people, it makes some folks uncomfortable to speak about revolution. Other people are invigorated by the terminology when there's so many things that need to change. It seems as though sometimes in the Black community that we are waiting to get to the point of being forced into uniting, being forced into working collectively, which we know, you know, is often spoke about, but to actually get out here and do it is always a big challenge. How do you foresee us being able to, I guess, have the kinds of healing conversations we need to have in order for us to rebuild our trust?
Well, in terms of the terminology that's out there, using the word revolution, people have been indoctrinated to think that means something violent. I mean, it's revolutionary if you, as a family unit, raise your children properly, educate your children, do anything that improves the community. Those are revolutionary acts. So that's something that we have to really understand, that it doesn't necessarily mean that that's something that's violent. Usually when it's a violent issue, it's because we've been placed in a position to have to defend ourselves, not being the aggressor and attacking anyone. But as far as trying to as you stated, address these issues, there's a variety of ways that can be done. You know, I mean, we have to motivate people to look beyond their immediate surroundings or their nuclear family and look at the family as a whole. And when we work toward improving the larger family, then we improve our condition as well. And that's something that requires dialogue, that requires looking beyond just our individual needs and addressing us, everything as a community.
Ashe. We've got a caller in queue. Do you mind if I open up a mic?
Sure.
Okay, hold on. Last four digits, 9452. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, Queen. It's Sister Erica.
Greetings, Sister Erica.
Happy
welcome
to be here. Thank you.
Ashe. Ashe. Sister Erica is in Pittsburgh, and as you know, they just had a murder up there. How old was the brother? Was he 15 or 17, Sister Erica?
Say that again, Queen. Sorry.
The brother who was shot up there in Pittsburgh when you all were protesting, how old was he?
I believe he was 17, Antoine Rose Jr. Antoine Rose II.
Okay, Ashe. And they just had a lot of counter protests, going up there. And one of the things that the city did, Baba G2, as a strategy is change in the midst of their protests, the rules and laws on where they could protest and really threw a wrench in things as far as the mobilization went, but they still continue to organize. They're still rallying around that particular case. In your opinion, from a historical perspective, where are we as far as the effectiveness that protests had then and have now? And are they as effective, and should we be using some other element other than actual public protests, or does it still have the potential to impact laws and impact the rules that we are subjected to?
Okay. Are you directing that to me, sir?
Yeah, hold tight, this is Erica. Go ahead, Bob G2.
That's a difficult question to answer for a lot of reasons. I mean, we have traditionally used protest as a means of airing our grievances or injustices that we're subjected to. And on a mass level, it may have some benefit, but we know that it's just a Band-Aid approach to dealing with this problem. I think the most effective way of dealing with it, or there has been the most effective way of dealing with it, was challenging on every level. I mean, looking at a variety of ways of addressing it. You know, you can address it through the legislator, you can address it through the pocketbook, and the pocketbook is probably the most effective. I know during the late 50s and early 60s, that had much, much more of an impact. But because we're so diverse today and trying to galvanize African people around something like that hasn't been that effective. You know, it may work for a brief period of time, but we need to look at various ways of addressing this, and not just one way in terms of protesting. You know, we use our pocketbook. We use whatever means necessary, as our brother Malcolm would say. So it needs to be a multi-pronged approach. Some of them can be discussed here, but it definitely needs to be a multi-pronged approach.
Ashe. Sister Erica, were you going to say something?
Hello.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
I'm here.
Okay. Yes, about the protest. You know, from what I've seen, is like it has been effective, but that, of course, it is because they came up with those guidelines, and you know, they Black Ops got together and served the mayor. I believe it's the mayor, with an injunction to counter the guidelines, because the guidelines were in, they had 8 different constitutional infractions, like violated 8 different things in the Constitution. So they served that injunction to him. So now we're waiting for, you know, the next, what they're going to do about that. But I always say I'm like the main one that's, says there's protesting is not going to be effective without organizing. So you know, if the energy is great, you go out there, you get a lot of people that are coming together for this one cause and bringing that energy, and you feel the power in the crowd, you feel the power of the people, and it's a great feeling, and it is effective, and it does, you know. But at the end of the day, when you go home, if you're not organizing something in the background on top of that, it's just not going to, you know, it's not going to be as effective as it would be if you were organizing. And then I think, like, from protesting, the best way to hit the enemy is in their pocket. So, like, graduate from the protest and start boycotting. You know, like, it definitely is effective. Now the East Pittsburgh Police Station, that's where I live, they, I went to their council meeting last week, and now they're talking about they're going to get rid of the whole East Pittsburgh Police Department, which means, see, now you could look at that as a win, or you could look at that as like a setup, because I don't trust nothing that they do. You know, so now all of a sudden they're negotiating with different departments to try to, because they're being sued from his family. So now to get the money, they're negotiating terms and contracts with other departments to just get rid of East Pittsburgh and, like, you know, what do you want to call it? Like, get together with other apartments or departments or whatever. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, to bring the county in, and that's somebody like, I don't know. I mean, it could be a good thing. It could. It just, you just never know with them. Like, you know, there's always some type of trick behind it. You might sound good right now. So now that's why we have asked for, like, a special meeting with the council, because we want the chance. We have to follow up, because they promised they're going to post information about, like, what departments are they looking at. And, you know, we should have a say-so in that, because people don't realize that taxpayers, the tax dollars, are what's paying their salary. So, actually, they work for us. Instead of letting them come in there and tell us what they're going to do, we want to say, this is our community. These are our children that you're patrolling these streets. And we want to make sure that this is going to be the best decision. Like, and it's kind of like one of those catch-22s, because it's like, you damned if you do, you damned if you don't. But something got to happen. So there is effectiveness to it, but it's just not the whole thing. Like, there has to be more to it than just a protest, you know?
Ashe, I agree. Baba G2, do you have a response to that?
You know, the sisters, she, in her community, they're doing whatever they feel is important. And, and I support that. But when we look at the overall picture, our people have been dying since day one. And it may not all be in Pittsburgh, but all across this country. You know, so if their people were dying at the level that ours were, that our people are, then something would have been done overnight to change that dynamic. So, you know, protesting, as I indicated earlier, has this, you know, plays a role. I don't think that's the overall solution to addressing the problem. I'm talking about from a national perspective, not just in any particular city. So I still feel there's a multi-pronged approach, as she said, boycotting. If we could get our people to not to use our dollar power to effect that change, or some other means, but there needs to be a multi-pronged approach to this. And really, the system is designed to those said they're going to get rid of all of the East Pittsburgh police. I don't see that happening. I mean, they're gonna continue to monitor us. They're gonna continue to do whatever they can to keep us in line, just like implementing the various rules related to where you can and can't protest. You know, how are they gonna determine this? Your loved ones that are being lost. Now you're confined to a little box, and you can protest in that little box. You step outside of that box, then there's consequences to it. I mean, people really have to be prepared to sacrifice to make changes take place. That's what happened in the 60s and 70s, and a lot of people came under attack because of that. A lot of people got incarcerated for their life. You know, we don't support those soldiers, those brothers and sisters that decide, I'm going to make this sacrifice for the greater good. But then they get warehoused and they're there for decades with little to no support. So, you know, their organizing is definitely part of that strategy. You know, civil disobedience is part of that strategy. You know, we can't expect to see change take place without being able to give up something. I'm talking about on a permanent level, not just they address this particular killing today. And as a people, we usually have a knee-jerk reaction to a killing. You know, a killing take place, we're up in arms. As soon as that particular killing, the energy around that dies down, then we don't continue the work. And then we wait for the next killing jump up to happen, which is happening daily. And then we're up in arms. Somewhere around the United States of America, people are being murdered daily.
Ashe, you make an excellent point about the sacrifice of things. And societal-wise, we talk about it here on Sign of the Times. I've expressed it as the microwave society. Like we got really comfortable, too comfortable, and almost to the point of being the L word, which I don't like to use, but lazy about our activism. You know, after so-called desegregation, affirmative action, even the microwave, I think, had an effect on us as a society, our right now-ness of things. So you're absolutely right when you talk about organizing and strategy building. It definitely is still a real high need out there. How can we support more of our political prisoners? That I have a postcard in front of me that the Jericho Project put out, and it has a list of the current political prisoners who were part of the party, and it lists the prisoners and their writing address for the MOVE family who are still behind enemy lines. How is it that this is not considered, I guess, an act of war, an aggression, by the fact that they're still incarcerated? And two, what can we be doing more as a community to advocate for their freedom? Because writing letters, you know, to them, it's my understanding that sometimes they don't even receive them, let alone, you know, if we were to actually try to get them to organize around some outside support. So where are we as a community? How can we offer more support to those who have been captive for so long?
Well, more people need to be involved. More people need to be informed. And we have to stop dividing ourselves when we say political prisoners. One of the things that we focus on in L.A. Really strongly, and we have been doing, I've been an advocate of this since I've been out of prison, is that we have individuals, we have what we call the cream of the crop, and they're deserving of our support. Don't get me wrong. But we have MOVE members, we have Matulu, we have Mumia, but we also have a lot of unnamed and faceless individuals that are still behind enemy lines and has made a major contribution to this movement that don't get recognized. So so we divide among ourselves who should and shouldn't get support. So that definition of political prison needs to be broadened. There needs to be a criteria that says if I'm committed to this movement, like, for example, during Black August, there's a focus on Comrade George. There's a focus on Jonathan Jackson. There's a focus on Qatari. There's a focus on the three brothers that was murdered in Owain, W.L. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Alvin Miller. Well, there were a lot of brothers that were murdered that you never hear about. There are a lot of brothers, comrades, that are still behind enemy lines after 40-plus years because they stood up. You know, and this doesn't mean that everybody has to stand up and take that position. Everybody's not going to stand up and take that position. But those that don't should support those that do. We should support the Mumias and all of those, these individuals that stood up and resisted the subjugation that they were under. So they need this support. So that's, you know, that's something that, that we can begin to do is revitalize or reinvigorate supporting those type of comrades that take that, that make that ultimate sacrifice, or that, that don't care, or not that they don't care, they, but they don't allow the system to govern how they resist. You know, they fight against the system. You know, so those of us that don't fight against it should be willing to support them. You know, so mm-hmm. we need to get more people involved in this fight, because ultimately we're all affected by it. Whether we stand up or not, you know, as a people, we're all affected by it.
That's so true. Sister Erica, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I clicked over. I'm so sorry. Like, I do, I want to comment. I don't know if I'm changing the subject or not, because I just want to share what happened in my house today, right? That's why I'm, like, clicking over. My daughter just got here, you know. Okay, so earlier I go to my therapy appointment. I go out. I have to catch the bus because my car's, you know, messed up or whatever. So I'm gone for a few hours, and my sister, I leave my sister here at the house. Well, we have to go outside. So, you know, while I'm gone, my sister's here alone. She's cleaning up the kitchen, whatever, straightening up the dishes, whatever. She goes outside to smoke a cigarette. Well, you know, I live in the project, so there's a whole bunch of, you know, it's nice out, all the kids are out, all everybody's out. So this young kid comes up to my sister. He's trying to holler at her, like, yeah, what's up, your toes are pretty, I want your number and all that. So he's young, so she's my age. She walks in the house like, young boy, you too young for me, go ahead with that. Well, he follows her in the house. As soon as she gets in the kitchen, she turns around. He just drops dead in my kitchen, right? Like, gone. He's not breathing. He's spitting up blood. They called the paramedics. So the next door neighbor, young kid, came over and saved his life. They hit him with Narcan. He OD'd. He's 22 years old. You know what I mean? My mind is blown right now. I'm dealing with another one of the young homies up the street, my friend's son, good kid, tries to stay out the way. She's always down my house talking about, yeah, I'm moving so my son can get away from this, da, 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 da. Well, he gets shot on the fifth van the other day. Like, the count, you know, it's like a lockup. Like, the sis is like lockup. So they come get the kids, and they drive them in the van, they take them, they go to school there and everything, and they bring them home at night. It's like a lockup thing. He's on the lockup van and gets shot. And now he's had four surgeries since Tuesday, and he's in an induced coma fighting for his life. Mm. His children are out of control. I'm so stressed out right now. And then I got, like, all the kids running. Like, it's just, you know. I mean, all the stuff that we're doing, we lost Antoine Rose. We're not just helping them right now. I don't know what it is, but right now. You know, it's about getting justice for Antoine, but, you know, at the end of the day, you say, what is justice? Because I've seen something on Facebook, you know, about the cop in Texas maybe that got 15 years for, you know, killing a young man. Okay, mm-hmm. Is that justice? Is 15 years worth a baby's life? You know, it's a step in the right direction, I guess, but at the same day, it makes me think what Asada Shakur says, you can't expect to get this from them. The people who are working hard to keep you oppressed are not in the interest of giving you justice. So now, and this is the big debate going on around, you know, the city of Pittsburgh right now, is like, okay, when the police shoot somebody, everybody come out and they want justice. But then when our babies is out here killing each other, nobody want to talk about that. But it's such a sensitive subject because you can't called black on black crime, because what is that? White on white crime, Chinese on Chinese, that don't mean nothing. But we still are losing so many of our youth for dumb stuff. And this, and it's just like, I'm, you know, the work that I do is groundwork, ground zero. You know what I mean? Because I got people coming to my house crying about their children who they can't get a control over. And these babies' guns is bigger than me. You know what I mean? And these kids is just running wild out here, and they're ODing. Like, it's just, like, they listen to that damn new rap music and all these 6ix9ine on the, I don't, you know, I'm sorry to put his name out there, but that's the one I think of, because he's just, you know, he's always rapping about drugs and all this extra stuff, mollies and pills and all that, and this is what these kids really look up to and listen to and think that it's cool to be like. This is a young generation. It's just getting so bad. I don't like to call it, I don't like to put the people down. I don't like to say this is a young generation of dope fiends. I just say this is, we super lost at this point. Like, the babies need recognition. They need to be acknowledged. This problem has to be acknowledged. This young man, my friend's son, is fighting for his life. She's on the phone with me crying like, didn't I always come down there and tell you I'm trying to get him away from this? Like, yes, and she was on her way to moving out into a house. You know what I mean? And now it's just always something going on, man. And I think the biggest important part that we spoke about when you talking about protests and all that is the boycott, because this is what I always tell everybody. We circulate so much money, but everybody around here is broke, but we always got money for that loose cigarette or that whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's always, but we don't pay attention to where our money goes. We lazy. I hate to say it too, but we rather go right to the corner store where the people got this right here. But these are people that just came into our neighborhood and takes all our money, that don't put nothing back into our neighborhood. I said we need to start doing an exercise of a track chart of how we spend every single 50 cent, every dollar that we spend. And we got to start noticing where our money goes. I read an article earlier today where they were talking about 38 hate organizations in Pennsylvania. Why was the Nation of Islam considered a hate organization? I'm like ready to leave the media outlet alone that's reporting this shit. That's not a hate organization, but it just made me look at all these other ones, because there was like the White Aryans and all this stuff, and I'm just thinking, like, if people could realize where their money goes and stop putting your money into the hands of these people in these organizations that get with Walmart and do these prisons. I read an article today about the prison. They're 45 is trying to appoint 20 new Supreme Court judges. When they get, if they get in there, they got a position to stop it. But if they get in there, that's for life. These are people he handpicked. So we already, that tells the whole story right there. Like, things is getting ugly in Pennsylvania right now. Over 20, close to 30 guards got sick off of some type of K2 coming through the mail. That's what they're saying. A couple inmates got sick. Every Pennsylvania jail institution is on lockdown right now. No mail coming through there, nothing. Like, things is just out of control, like, on every level. And you have to start somewhere. I think we have to start supporting the people with our best interests. You have to support your other fellow people in your community. If you see some, you know, Sandy down the street that wants to start her own business in the neighborhood, support her, because she's charging just like everybody else. Don't try to get a discount. Help her get on her feet. Stop spending your money over there with them people who send their kids to college off of your little loose cigarette money. Instead of that, write that down right where you're spending your money down, and make sure you investigate. When you're going to shop for something, you know, I don't go to Walmart. Since I heard that I don't do Walmart, I don't do McDonald's, I don't care. Walmart was the only place that had this spinach dip mix that I wanted the other day, and I just didn't make it because I wasn't about to go to Walmart. You know what I mean? You have to be serious about that, even for them little days, that one little time. Because this stuff that we facing out here is serious, and it's war out here, and it's starting everywhere. It's war on everybody. They're trying to bring, military into Chicago. We right behind them. We just like them, but they're a little step ahead of us. So, yeah, this is what, I mean, you got to peep what's going on all around. So and we have to communicate with people from all over so we can get on one accord. There has to be, and liberation got to be it. But there's a million ways to tackle it. But I know that you have to watch where your money goes. And if you stop their money, if they can't capitalize off you no more, they're going to crumble. But if you keep being lazy, just shopping at Walmart real quick to get that one little spinach dip mix because nobody else got it, you're helping them. I ain't helping them. I'm stopping, you know, and I'm the poorest person in the world. But I'm going to be the same way with some money, even worse. If I'm poor right now and I'm trying to get something and I can't get it, I'm still saying no. You have to be real serious about it. You got to really pay attention to where your money's going. And stop supporting these people who's killing us and oppressing us and keeping us down, not letting us get nowhere. You know how long it took for the ambulance? They was bullshitting around. Like, they didn't want to take that child and go get him some help. Because he's a repeat offender. He out here doing whatever. I don't know what he's doing. But this is what I'm saying. They don't care. Until we care enough to watch where our money goes, we're going to be in the same situation. You know what I mean?
Hold tight. I want to get
for no more rhetoric. You know, and some
Erica,
action.
I want to get Baba G2's response to your story first of all. And there is an issue, as we know, across the community with what they call black on black violence. But we know what that is rooted in by the fact that we're closest to one another. So quite naturally. We're going to have a closer effect on those who are closest to us versus if we were in another community. So really that term black-on-black violence, we refer to it in the movement as horizontal violence because, you know, there's violence inflicted upon us by the state, as you so eloquently described, but there's also violence that we experience with our brothers and sisters. So Baba G2, where are you in your opinion, on approaching that particular area of concern? You know, we do have to take better care of one another, and this drug abuse issue in our community, I don't know if you've seen the video, but it was a young man, I believe this was in Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, the other day on Facebook. He couldn't have been no more than 12 years old, falling down the steps, and he had smoke some K2. And so it seems like this drug abuse issue is hitting us at a younger and younger age in our community, where our children are leaving elementary school, junior high school, and experiencing these types of, these types of circumstances. So I yield back to you, Baba, for your response to the violence issue and the drug abuse and youth in our community.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank the sister for sharing, and it definitely was on point. You wasn't off track with sharing what you did. A couple things come to mind that I'll address. First of all, a comrade of mine named Harold Welton, when he, in the 70s, when he was given the project, his kind of living project, he started organizing among young people in that project. It's called Avalon Gardens. In fact, you can go on YouTube and see some of the trailers of a documentary that he's put together that he travels around the country and show different groups. And they changed the name from the projects to the projects, PROUD-jects. And they began to organize among these youngsters. They called themselves the Jonathan Jackson Educational Cadre because he was inspired by the example, the selfless examples of Jonathan Jackson, the younger brother of George Jackson. And he proved that no matter where you are, you can make a difference. And the one thing that you used earlier, sister, that I want to go back to is the term organized. You know, if you get people within your environment to begin to meet and have these discussions, it could be something as simple as a little house party, but you're not coming together just to play some music and eat some food. You're coming together to have dialogue. You're coming together to talk about the issues that are going on within your immediate environment and what y'all can do to address that. As far as the gang violence or the street tribes that engage in this fratricide among one another, and also that's closely related to the drug problem, one of the things that we've been doing for quite a few years, since 93, we formed the International Council for Urban Peace and Justice, and that involved brothers and sisters from all around the country when we initially got together back in 93 in Kansas City, Missouri, to discuss these problems and how we can address those. Initially, it was called the National Council for Urban Peace and Justice. It was initially organized by a brother who's no longer with us, Carl Upchurch, and he reached out through the churches. He got funding to go around the country and talk to people about this, about the social problems that impact our lives and what we could do to stop it. And so that's something that you do. In fact, there's a brother right there in Pittsburgh, Rashad Birdsong. I don't know if he's near the area where you're at, but he's been building a movement within his organization, Community Empowerment Project, to address all those concerns as well. And so, you know, we do have issues among ourselves that have to be resolved. You know, and a lot of these issues were created in the vacuum when those that were in numbers, those brothers and sisters that were part of the Black Panther Party and other formations that actively worked to address those issues, you know, address the lack of food for children going to school in the morning. You know, they started the free breakfast program. They had the medical program to address sickle cell anemia and other issues. So we got to get back to that. We got to get back to not just talking about the problem, but creating solutions, you know, discussing solutions to these problems. That's going to go a long ways toward addressing drugs. You know, at the same time, we challenge those that's in a position of power within the government. You know, if you're not representing your constituents, then you don't need to be there. You know, but it involves us collectivizing our energy and using that to make changes, as this brother did with Jonathan Jackson Education Cadre. You know, revive those type of programs. You know, that would be my response to addressing that. And as Queen Tahira said, you know, this is a horizontal issue, you know, because we're getting attacked on all sides. You know, but we're the best. We are our solution. You know, we have to turn to ourselves and organize among ourselves to make a difference. If we don't, nobody else will.
That's right. That's right. And one of the things I wanted to thank you, too, for is making about Black August. I've been sharing them around. And you're right. There are a lot of unsung heroes, if you will, who contributed to the progress that we were able to make. We definitely appreciate you, you know, sharing that knowledge and information with us. And so let's talk about Black August and how can we, I guess, make sure that we don't lose that legacy and we continue to share amongst each other, you know, the information that will give our young people the strength that they need to overcome any fear that they may have of consequences. Because as we proceed forward, you know, we're going to need some bold changes to be made. We're going to need some strong people to be involved in what we're building. And I guess, you know, how do we get there? How are we going to get there considering the circumstances that we're living in now?
Well, I thank you for mentioning the thing about the information I was sharing. My initial effort was to take each day of Black August and share information, and that information would, laying the foundation with Black August was about how I got involved, and I would lead up to a lot of the social issues that we're impacted with today. But because the activities that we were engaged in weekly, which required a lot of time, a lot of energy, I wasn't able to keep up with the daily topics, but I'll definitely make sure that those are completed and prepared to do them during Black August 2019. In terms of just continuing that legacy, there's been a resurgence of interest in Black August over the years. So I don't see it going anywhere. This is our 39th year of commemorating Black August and commemorating those that made that sacrifice. I think it will just continue to build on that. And seeing Black August as a strategy, when Black August was initiated in 80, Black August Organized Committee was initiated in 80 in the community. It was after the result of a lot of things that had happened in the past. One of the architects of Black August was his brother, Jeff Guitar Gordon, among others, Shujah Graham and others, who were Mapahali. They sat down in San Quentin at the time that they were organizing that. We were in Solidaire in the SHU program in Owing. So there was communication back and forth between different prisons that were going to initiate that process. Unfortunately, before we can begin that, Qatari was injured on the prison yard in San Quentin, and he was basically left to die. They rolled him into the infirmary because they had issues with him, like they do a lot of prisoners. And he sat there on that gurney, or he laid there on that gurney for a couple hours before they took him to the outside hospital. He had massive head injuries, and so he died as a result of that. And so it was the following year in 79 that we actually began the process of commemorating those that had lost their lives during August, during the month of August. And then as Black August grew, it took on more of a universal meaning related to a lot of things that have occurred. And when you look at things historically, a lot of things that have affected African people throughout our period in this country or in this region, the stolen land. Going back to the first group of Africans that were brought from the continent and enslaved here what they referred to as North America, in Jamestown, Virginia, back in 1619. You look at the rebellions, the resistance to the oppression that people fought against, such as Nat Turner, who had a rebellion back in 1831, August 21st. You look at the Haitian Revolution that got its start in August. And throughout history, you know, the Watts Uprising, the Watts Rebellion, in August. So it started to have more of a universal meaning where people can resonate, African people resonate with that, and other press people resonate with that because of significance of that month. So that's where it got its origin from. And we try to make sure that the original intent of Black August doesn't get lost in the interpretation that other people put on it, and honor those individuals, and also look at the broader picture. So I don't see it going anywhere. I think it's going to continue to build, and we'll see more people getting involved with it as a political structure that will help to address or help to revive that liberation movement that has been dormant for a while across this country. I mean, there are groups like Black Lives Matter and other formations that have contributed to that, but Black August has a history, like I say, goes back 39 years, and actually 40 years when you talk about the development of it.
Ashe. Now, Babajita, you mentioned the organization that Brother Carl Upchurch helped originally form, the Coalition for Peace and Justice. We had an event over this past year. How can we make sure that event is expanded? Because I knew Brother Carl, and he actually helped to mentor my son for some time when he was in the Columbus area. And I know that he was a person of high character, and I would like to support expanding it and supporting the seeds that you all have planted. But getting, I guess, sometimes through the politics, even in the hood, can be difficult. So how can we make sure that next year's event is more, I guess, inclusive of more groups and has more participation?
Well, as you know, sister, because you were involved with that process, we initially tried to organize, as you said, you know, the politics in the hood. We initially tried to organize a peace summit in Los Angeles through the International Council, and there was a breakdown in the process, and so we began to work with other individuals, in particular, my brother is still down, Brother Hess, who was really passionate about seeing the violence that occurred among us cease and wanted to contribute to the process. You know, so toward the end of the organizing, things kind of fell apart, but we still have the opportunity to now begin to work toward building building that base up again, and perhaps relationships that have soured as a result of that, we can put those issues behind us or work toward resolving those issues so that we can be united in our efforts to bring something to the table. There are a lot of organizations, particularly in L.A. that I'm aware of, and there's some around the country. I don't necessarily agree with their approach, but I support anything that works toward eliminating that division among us. I have a real concern, and I've always expressed this. It's nothing that I don't share, but I have a real concern with working with law enforcement on any level, because I understand their role, you know, and where they can be part of what we do. They don't hold themselves accountable or their peers accountable for what they do, you know. So if I'm in a meeting and we're having a discussion, and that discussion gets heated and it leads to blows between us, I feel that we should either resolve that among us now or just walk away. Whereas when I'm speaking of the other person being somebody from law enforcement. So we're not on equal playing field, because if we were engaged in fisticuffs, I would end up in handcuffs, you know. That's one of my primary concerns, is because their whole purpose, no matter what type of face that they put on, what type of benign face that you see with those that they want the public to see, their whole purpose is to oppress us, or they're the front shock troops for those that run this country, those that benefit from the most, the 1%. So we'll never be on equal playing fields with them. So, you know, we need to organize among ourselves, because we're working in our best interest. So I hope to see going into 2019 that we begin to look at ways where we can unite around this country. And I think the initial summit that happened in 93 was beautiful. I mean, it you know, relationships were built that have lasted, you know, for the past 25 years. A lot of these brothers, like you talk about, Rashad Birdsong out of Pittsburgh, Khalid Samad, and other brothers and sisters, Nane, with Bottles and Needles. We have a bond, even when we don't always agree, we still have a bond that transcends anything else because we're committed to this process and we'll be committed to it for life.
So, Ashe.
You know, that has to broaden.
Yes, yeah, and I've never been so hopeful for our future, Baba G2, as I am now, just because of the energy changing. So many of our young people are waiting, I think, to hear the right type of message to get involved. And when they do get involved, you know, we have to be prepared as olders or elders, whichever, to set the best example for them so that they want to continue to stay. Because, you know, some of us are elders and some of us are just olders. And so accountability across the board is something that I think our young people are looking for. And once they get that or see that or experience that, it's going to make a big, big difference in what we see develop out of our community. So, you know, again, we appreciate the fact that you all have not given up that vision. To make that happen and to make sure that that happens in the best atmosphere as possible. So Ashe, so let's talk about the politics a little bit. Me, myself, I don't have a lot of faith in what we see out here politically, whether it's the Democratic Party, whether it's the Republican Party, even to a certain extent the so-called independents, I think, are Republicans and Democrats in independent clothing all too often. So as far as where we are from the revolutionary standpoint, are we ready for a resurgence in the Black Panther Party or a Black Party? And how can we, I guess, start to have those kinds of conversations to get our people ready to not only vote in a particular way should they choose to be a part of that process, but to actually be vetted as a potential candidate? Because right now, as you just said, I know as an African woman, I don't feel represented by any party that's out there. I see us as African women eventually formulating if we can't get a Black party, a party of African women, because we know that they use our vote. Often we are the swing vote, especially when you look at what happened in Florida just recently and with the governor's race, even in Alabama last year. So, politically, where are we, and should we be looking at the politics of formulating or redeveloping the party, if you will, to represent us from the political standpoint? And I yield.
As you indicated, the Republican Party, Democratic Party, and to a large degree, the Independent Party, you know, these are all the same groups that just have a different message. They're not, you know, this system of government is set up to sustain the system of government. You know, that's why I don't, on a local level, there can be some significant changes, but as you move higher up that ladder, then you have a oath to uphold this oppressive government, you know, and try to lessen the abuses that the vast majority of people are subjected to. We got to stop playing their game. You know, I know that utilizing the elective process is one way of making some changes, but the foundation of this country has to be disrupted and a new form of government installed in order for the people to be effectively represented. You know, you have all these special interest groups that continue to uphold that's who the politicians will turn to. You know, they want, you know, those ones that support them, whoever put a dollar in their pocket is who their allegiance is to, not to the masses that they say they represent. So we have to look at those relationships and say that there needs to be a change. You know, we got the Congressional Black Caucus, but we still have poverty on a scale for a country that's one of the most progressive countries, or the most progressive country financially in a world power that exists, but the level of poverty, the level of homelessness, that's getting worse. So So we have to look at those things and look at what we can do as a collective body. And that's not just with African people. That's with everybody that's affected by this level of poverty. You know, and you got to look at the ones that have the resources, you know, that are not doing anything to address that. They may pay lip service to it, but you don't have, you know, if all of these politicians that look like you and me are in power, and they're wealthy, you know, their immediate family is taken care of, and they may sympathize with what we're going through, but they're not making major sacrifices to change those conditions. They'll argue, they'll fight, and they'll say they need to do that, and they'll stay in that office until they die or until their term runs out, and then they move on to something else. You know, so you know, we're our best resources. You know, and I strongly believe that until we begin to organize in the way that we've organized in the past, or looking at what happened in the past, looking at the mistakes, correcting those mistakes, and beginning to organize anew in the society, then there's not going to be a change in relationship. You know, the gap between the haves and have-nots has grown wider. It hasn't narrowed any. You know, so we continue to run to the politicians, the Democrats, the Republicans, and the Independents, and think that that's going to make a difference in our lives, in the lives of our families. And I'm talking about on a national scale, and it hasn't. You know, these are still puppets for the interests of the 1%. You know, you look at things that happen internationally. You know, you got America's always had their hand in everything affecting the resources in other countries, particularly the continent of Africa, which is rich in resources. You know, they destabilized the Libyan government, not because Gaddafi was a dictator. I mean, look at the things that he did for his people. You know, similar to Cuba, you know, he provided free education, free medical, and also there were a lot of incentives to get the people, the average person in that country, to work toward rebuilding their country. You know, there were a lot of incentives. So how could he be that bad, and that they had to destroy him, other than they wanted to have more of input in what goes on over there? Look at the other countries, you know what I mean? So, but on a local level, I think that's what we need to do. Like I said, putting people in place locally will do more to have an impact on these problems than looking at the politicians that run this country on a national level. So it all comes back down to us being able to organize and galvanize everyone within our circles, within our community, to work on our behalf,
mm-hmm.
to make these changes.
Ashe, Sister Erica, did you have a question or a comment? I don't want to forget that you hear.
About the voting thing, the way I look at that, I definitely agree there needs to be a whole new system in place. I believe there's a blueprint, you know, but you have to be able to get to the point where that can happen, you know. And the one thing that I do, like, I do have groups, you know, I have people come to the house. We do prisoner groups, so, like, anybody got the as you know, we talk about a political prisoner, we write to them, and then we talk about our loved ones and we write to them, you know, just give them space, whole conversation to see, you know, the systemic oppression, and we can all agree on certain things. And one thing I do when they come is I get everybody to fill out a registration, you know, for voting. Even if they've done it already, because a lot of people don't know, like, if you went to jail since the last time you registered, you got to re-register, you know, new address. If you have a kid in college, they can get the some kind of ballot. I forget what it's called, the absentee ballot, where, you know, they can still vote here when they're away in college. You know, still, I just want to get people involved. But, you know, when you're talking about politics, there's an old saying, politics is a dirty game. So name one honest politician. You can't. You know what I mean? Now, when I register the people to vote, I encourage them to go independent and not go Democrat or Republican, and that's only because politics is a dirty game. And it's and in a way that the people, you know, that are already in charge are evaluating how the thing is going to turn out is by the pre-election and how many people registered for them and Republicans. Okay, so if you do independent, they can't do a count because they don't know which way you're going to go. Because that's what they do. Like, they do these counts in our neighborhoods to see who registered as what. Then they do the primary election to get an idea of who's going to win later on, you know. But then they go off of those statistics to strategize and use tactics to, you know, like right now I believe the Democratic Party is being infiltrated. And I believe that's on purpose. And people are, you know, being used as tools. And the bottom line is accountability. And that's for me, for you, and especially for these people in these positions. Because like I said, we paid their salary. If you pay taxes, that's, they work for you. You know, so just to throw a twist in the game, I ask them to go independent, and then I tell them, I write everybody's name down who signs as independent. Now the mission is to get them to understand what exactly happens when you get into that ballot. How do you vote as an independent? When do you vote as an independent? And then you have to also educate the people on who are the candidates and what's their history like? Like, what have they done for the community? When they were in this position, did they do the right thing? You know, and then I don't encourage people. I don't try to sway people to vote for one particular person. I just would like to educate them enough so they have enough knowledge that when they do make their vote, it can be effective. You know what I mean? And, you know, and not let the people count on their statistics to find another way to infiltrate something. You know, like, hit them off guard. You got to come, I'm doing independent because you don't know what I'm going to vote when I get in there. So that means y'all better act right. You know what I mean? And be held accountable. So that's what I want to see, some accountability. We all human at the end of the day. If you make a mistake, that's, we want to hear that. We don't want you covering it up a million ways, showing us all the dirty ways you can play with the paperwork, because then we understand when you get that paperwork and it's you against me, you get, you know, you're going to play dirty with the paperwork. We don't want politicians like that. But the whole system is, like, you know, no good. So it's like, you know, it's one of those things where you have to get in, you have to get enough people in the positions first to be able to make the bigger changes. And like the brother was just saying, local is very important. That's what I mean. Like, it's not just about that big, you know, presidency and all the people up there. It's like, who are your local politicians so we can start working on community by community, you know what I mean, and start holding the people accountable, you know. I don't really have too much faith in the system, so it's hard to, you know, be totally, you know, trusting into that, you know, but you can't just sit and do nothing, like, so you have to do something. But my strategy is sign up independent so they can't count your vote, and then get educated on who's running, and when you do go in there to cast that vote, make sure it's effective so we can get who we want.
want to see and they see. Yeah. And with that, I'll yield.
Ashe. Ashe, Baba, do you have a response to that?
Yes. I agree with the sister saying in terms of investigating individuals that are running for office and not just look at the politicians or the politicians, as I like to refer to them as. Look at the local judges and so forth, particularly those that will have an impact on our youth, you know, that's running for office or running for reappointment. You mentioned early on in the conversation about the panel of judges that y'all refer to as 45. I don't refer to them as anything, but they'll be in that position for life. But look at the local judges. There was a recent election in L.A. where there was not much discussion, and people don't really like to take the time to read all the information. So if it's summarized form, then that helps. But there were about four or five judges who was running for reassignment to the bench or to higher bench that had been sympathetic toward, on a lower level, sympathetic toward our youth, you know, compassion towards them. So those are the kind of people that you want to get in a position on a small scale as well, because they'll have a direct effect on the level of incarceration of our young people or even within the adult system. So you not only do the research, but you invite them into your community. You know, you allow them to express what their views are when you have certain politicians that's trying to get into office. You know, I know there's one sister who actually was a good friend, or is a good friend, who is now a congresswoman. You know, when I met her, she was running a program working with you after the LA uprising, 92 Rebellion. She ran a program that galvanized a lot of youth to shut down all the liquor stores because, like, you know, every other corner you walk to, there's a liquor store. And so they started this program, the Challenge Liquor Store, that evolved into an organization that she ran for a while, and then she got she ran for office on a local level, and she's now a congresswoman. But some of her politics changed in during the course of that. And another friend of mine who was close with her and knew her well, she asked her one day, you know, what happened? You know, you used to be this kind of person, now you know. You're making decisions or you're voting on things that are questionable. She said, I turned 50. So it was about her own individual position that she represented. You know, she wanted to make sure that she was a cog in the wheel so she would be up there. You know, I mean, she still does some good stuff, but there's some things that are questionable. So you want to make sure that they're walking the walk, you know, and not just talking the talk, because they can say anything until they get in that position, and then they can switch up.
Wow. Yeah, that's deep. That's deep. I often look at the Black Political Caucus too, and think, you know, how can we be in such a bad state as a nation of people when we have all these so-called groups like them, the NAACP, it's all kinds of groups out here that say that they represent our best interests, but yet I don't see any or very little real progress. I mean, and to me, it's like it's only progress that's temporary or long enough to, you know, get the demonstrations to cease or to pacify one or two groups so they can go back and calm down everybody else. And so it's just deep trying to navigate through all of this and still stay positive despite it all. And I yield.
Yeah, well, they a lot of them, the word accountability was thrown around a little bit, and that's what it is. You know, they're not being accountable to those they say they represent. You know, they have their individual interests that sometimes dominate, and that's not what they're there for. You know, so those are things that we have to watch closely and call it out when we see it. You know, if they stop being accountable, then they're no longer any good to us. They're not representing our interests.
Ashe. Baba G, one thing I wanted to ask you too, being a sister out here, you know, standing in the trenches, if you will, here in my city, I'm in Cincinnati, I've paid the cost. Like, you know, we've been made homeless. I had my tires on my cars marked to the point where the police towed them. They came after my dogs with the SPCA. I mean, the comprehensive attack against my family and myself and the development corporation that I have here was so multifaceted that, you know, it was hard to defend to the point, like I said, they ended up eventually getting us out of the neighborhood. But one of the things that I noticed just as a sister is that we need more men, more black men to step up. I've been often not to the point of being fearful, but I'm concerned. The more I step out, the more I do speak truth to power, the more I expose myself, the more I expose my family and, you know, so on. But I can't live in fear, in that fear. I won't let that fear overtake me because to me, you know, when they made us homeless, that was an ultimate stab, if you will. And if that didn't kill me, nothing will. So, you know, it's hard out here as a sister standing in the trenches. But, you know, do you have a message for our men to get more of them to step up? And how can we as sisters, I guess, not only be more supportive of our brothers who do, but let them know that we still need y'all. We still need y'all to protect us. We still need y'all to be out here with us. We still need your strength. We still need y'all, despite what some folks may appear, you know, through feminist movements or, you know, this masculinity that I see in a lot of our sisters. We still need our brothers. So how can we improve, I guess, our overall relationships and get there so we can be there and get there together, you know, men and women? And I yield.
That's a serious challenge. You know, the oppressor has done a good job in separating us, you know, and having some sisters think that, you know, men are not worth it, so we're gonna go it alone, or we're gonna organize among sisters. They've emasculated African men to the point where, unless they're being aggressively abusive toward our women, they don't feel their own worth. You know, I wish there was a fast and easy answer to that. I don't think it is. I think it's just a matter of us being consistent with trying to let each other know that, you know, that I have your best interest at heart. You know, and if I don't, like if a brother doesn't, you know, then get with brothers that does have your best interest in heart and say, you know, sit your brothers down and talk to them, you know, see if we can build our numbers. That's always a challenge because this white boy, and understand when I say white boy, I'm talking about a system, not an individual. They have done a terrific job. If we look at it from their perspective, they have done a terrific job in helping us to internalize our own oppression, where we have, you know, I'm thinking about the terminology, the N word, the B word. Those words are never a part of my vocabulary, not even when I wasn't conscious of a lot of social conditions impacting us. I remember that I was in a relationship once, and that relationship was really a challenge. And I just referring to a sister as a B or any other derogatory name, I just didn't know how to do it. And I was so angry in this relationship that I wanted to call the sister B. And so I had to actually plan how I was going to do it. And when I finally did it, she laughed at me. She said, "You don't even know how to say it." You know, so that's something that they have done an effective job at destroying the mind of us as a people, not just a man or a woman or a child, but us as a family unit. And we just have to, you know, it's a challenge to try to change those dynamics. You know, they allow the music that come across the airwaves to influence how we think. You know, there was a thing that was done about these rappers, and these are like some of the well-known rappers, when they went from hip-hop to gangster rap, and that was something that those behind the scenes helped promote. You know, you got paid for gangster rap that was derogatory toward women, that would push the drug game, you know, to make it seem exciting, and that's something that you want to get into. That was the design behind that. So the only thing that I can see at this juncture is countering that in little small circles. You know, brothers, for whatever reason, they will fear the oppressor, but engage in violence against their sisters and against their children. You know, and so it takes other brothers to stand up and say, "Man, look, we got to look at this for what it is. You know, we got to change within ourselves." You know, and that's a gradual process. At one time in our history, dating back to the late 60s and early 70s, even before that, where there was a whole different type of environment among African people, where loving one another was just something that came naturally. You know, having a two-parent household was more prevalent than it is today. And also highlighting those situations where it is, because it doesn't mean that doesn't exist, you know, but you don't see it, it's positive, you don't see as much. So, you know, like I said, there's no real fast and quick answer to that, but it's something that we have to work toward and make that more popular than the negative that exists out there.
Ashe, thank you for that. Thank you very much for that. We're going to get ready to close out. Sister Erica, do you have a question or a comment for Baba G2 before we let him go?
I've taken it in, Queen, you know, and I appreciate the knowledge, you know, from the elder, just to let him know. I do go to, you know, I work with Brother Rashad. We just came up with the Coalition for Urban Peace. So, you know, I'm in it however I see fit. So where I can be effective, you know, I try to go to where I can be effective and organize with people who, like you said, follow the process. And that's what I'm learning with Brother Rashad is like this. It's just all a process. Like there's strategies to it. There's, you know, a way to go about it. Things don't happen when you just snap your fingers. You got to organize. You got to be strategic. You got to mobilize. So I'm like, I'm learning a lot from the elder, and I appreciate, you know, all the knowledge that I get from the older ones. So, you know, I'm taking it all in. I appreciate you having me on, Queen. It's a great show, as always. Thank you to the brother who's speaking, giving us the knowledge. And that's it. Now I'll yield on that.
Ashe. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What I was going to say was that we have this technology that I don't think we're using to the best of our ability-wise here, and that could change any day. But the Facebook is a very good tool. I know it's problems with it, but those were, you know, that makes the circle smaller. You know, when you communicate with someone simultaneously across the country, you know, those type of groups or whatever need to be created more, where we can have these dialogues, we can share our successes and our failures, and talk about ways that we can address a lot of these social conditions. I know Rashad does a really good job of always putting a message out there, but we need to incorporate more like-minded people and look at, you know, we don't all have the right answers. You know, what works here may not work elsewhere, but when we share those experiences, it gives us something to think about. You know, I mean, it pains, as you were talking about what you and your family went through, that pains my heart. You know, because there needs to be brothers in your vicinity that is willing to step up, and not just brothers, just family unit. You know, looking at us, each other as family and protecting one another. You know, so they have the means and the ability to do any amount of damage that they want to us. They've proven that over and over again. We have to have the same type of commitment and to be able to sacrifice and make sure that we're taking care of each other.
Ashe. Well, thank you, Baba Jitu, again, for being here tonight. Thank you for your continued contribution to the community. And I want to continue to work with you to help with this summit, to help with Next Black August. Because, you know, I enjoyed the posts, you know, and I shared them, you know, with my constituents. And there's a lot of information that we need to still share, you know, amongst our young people. And again, you know, it's there's strength in knowledge. There's strength in information. And that's where our power lies, to know, you know, that we're not in this by ourselves. We truly aren't. So thank you. Let's continue to build. Please, let's stay in touch. And as we get ready to close tonight, I want to close honoring Aretha Franklin with her rendition of Bridge Over Troubled Water. So we can get through this, family, and we are going to get through this, but we have to stick together and continue to turn the struggle into a strategy, which is what we base our conversations on here on Sign of the Times and New Power Radio Network. So we're wrapping up Black August 2018, and I could not think of a better way to do it than with Baba Jitu. But we need to continue Black August the other 11 months of the year and keep empowering our young people with this knowledge. So, again, thank you for being a part of tonight's conversation, and thank you for everything that you're doing. And let's keep doing it, y'all. We'll see everybody Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Thank you so much. We're going to close out. Power to the people.
Call GP.